Hey, everybody, this is Brett, and welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Today is the 28th of January, 2012. And today on the show, supplemental installment, this is an interview I did about 2 weeks ago with a gentleman named Jeff Berwick, and his show, a video show, is called Anarchast. You can find out more at anarchast.com, and I went through his list of shows. I think he's done, this is his 18th episode, the one that I was on. He's got some guests that I've not heard of before, so I'm looking forward to kind of going through and taking a listen to some of his interviews. He did have Stefan, I think, in one of his first shows, Stefan Molyneux, freedomainradio.com. But yeah, so a lot of new material there. If I'm unfamiliar with these people, maybe you are too. So consider checking out Anarchast at anarchast.com. And I want to thank my friend Claire for helping facilitate this, for letting Mr. Berwick know about what I do. So thanks, Claire. Really appreciate it. And just one more quick thing before we start the show today. I want to say thank you to Robert for his donation. In fact, thank you to everybody who's been donating, either doing a one-time donation or signing up to be a monthly subscriber. I really, really appreciate that. It really helps. I am in the beginning phase of building this new website, and that is going to be a very labor-intensive, time-consuming project. I'm hoping, and this is very ambitious, I'm hoping to have that done by the beginning of April. That's, yes, with everything else going on, that is a pretty ambitious goal, but I'm going to be working on that. I might be recruiting some help for that. So, knowing that that time is worth something to people is certainly very helpful, so I really, really appreciate that. And another thing you might not know, all of the podcasts from this point forward have these little video previews. They're nothing special, but it's just 2 to 4 minutes, and every podcast, I think starting about 4 podcasts ago, will have at least one of these short little videos on YouTube. So if you haven't seen those and you have an interest in that, you can go to YouTube.com/School Sucks Podcast to check them out. Like them, comment on them, share them with your friends. And hopefully our YouTube presence will continue to grow. So anyway, thank you very much for listening. Here is my interview on Anarchast with Jeff Berwick.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Anarchast, your home for anarchy on the internet. I'm Jeff Berwick, and I have with me Brett Vinat of the School Sucks Podcast. I guess you can probably tell what he talks about on the School Sucks Podcast just by the title. And how are you doing, Brett?
Good, Jeff. How are you? And thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And I believe you're up in the so-called free state. Is that correct?
The so-called free state, yes.
Well, you know, compared to actual freedom, it's not all that free. But I guess it's one of the freer states. They should just call it the freer state for now.
Yeah, that's true. I think the more people try to be entrepreneurial up here and live their lives as free people, the more limitations they're realizing on their freedom. But I've lived in places like New York and Massachusetts, and comparatively, it's quite free. So,
yes, compared to those areas, for sure. And so the same question I ask all of our first-time guests is, how did you get into the freedom sort of thing? How did you get into anarchism or freedom or libertarianism?
Well, I would say probably the biggest step for me, and the timing of this, of course, is interesting, was the Ron Paul campaign of 2007 and 2008, when, you know, I had been a history teacher years prior, so I had always been interested in these kind of things, and I was just kind of casually watching the debates as they started towards the end of 2007 and progressed into 2008, and I said, wow, you know, that guy, a lot of the things he says makes a lot of sense, but I was kind of confused about why he was being allowed on television to say them. The wind was taken out of my sails when I saw how controlled the media was with respect to his message, and, you know, from there, I started looking for new sources of media. I'd already been listening to a show called Free Talk Live for a couple of years, and at that point, I had pretty much become a minarchist libertarian.
But after the whole Ron Paul campaign fizzled, I started getting into shows like Free Domain Radio and Wes Bertrand's Complete Liberty podcast, and that was kind of like the final jump. I was reluctant, you know, to make that final step towards what people call anarchy. I usually use the word voluntarism, or simply, you know, principles consistent with the way that we live our personal lives. Like, we're all sort of voluntarist libertarians in our personal lives. Like, we don't, if we're not psychopathic, we don't threaten and hurt other people to try and solve our problems and meet our goals. So, like, just kind of applying those ideas consistently to the public or political sphere, that seemed like the right path to go.
Very interesting. So I guess follow-up question to that would be, what are your thoughts on Ron Paul on this time around in 2012?
Oh, it's hard. I actually recorded a show about this not too long ago, just kind of warning people what the outcome was probably going to be, and not to put all their eggs in that basket and to not be overly disappointed when Ron Paul is completely marginalized by the Republican establishment in the mainstream media. And I have to say that, like, it's going a lot better for him than I thought it would go, despite a major smear campaign. But I don't, you know, I think that a lot of people would say that a Ron Paul presidency is better than any of these other maniacs being president. And that might be true from sort of an effect. But my question, my concern is a world that voted for George W. Bush in 2004 and Barack Obama in 2008, are they ready to have these ideas of freedom introduced into their lives? It doesn't seem like they are. And really, like, using the most powerful, coercive, and corrupt institution in the world to introduce them to those ideas, I'm not sure that that would work out either. So, mixed feelings about Ron Paul. He's a good, seems like a good man, seems like a definitely a good educator, but and sort of a gateway drug to some of these ideas. He was certainly for me. So I'm supportive of parts of it, but I'm reluctant at other parts, I guess I could say.
I'd have to agree with you on that one. Moving on, I came across your School Sucks podcast, and I love the name, and I love what you're talking about. And I've actually always been very anti-school, even before I even understood anything about freedom or liberty. I just, as a kid, I saw it as prison, and I always looked to escape. And you know, back then when I was younger, you know, that had me labeled as, you know, a bad kid, right?
Mm,
and
right.
And you know, well, what, he doesn't want to go and be, you know, totally disciplined 8 hours a day and sitting in a wooden chair and listening to drivel from complete idiots for the most part, and totally ingrained with propaganda and, you know, all those sort of things. And, you know, one of the things I always say to parents nowadays, sometimes they'll say, oh, my kid's not doing that well in school, and I usually go, oh, well, he's showing a lot of potential, because, you know, like, the last thing you would want is your kid to just love school. Like, I'm sure people like Barack Obama and all these social Clinton probably just loved school, right? Because, you know, it's sort of like this, you know, very controlled environment that's, you know, it has nothing to do with anything sort of freedom-minded at all. And so anyway, why don't you tell us, how did you begin this podcast, and how's it going so far?
Well, it's gone pretty well. I began over 2 years ago, and it started as an idea for a documentary film. I tried to pitch it to a couple people who had worked in film and television. They said it wasn't – one person told me it wasn't Michael Moore enough. And I – you know, my thinking was great, but apparently that's not how documentaries wind up on the big screen, by not being Michael Moore enough. So you know, I started to really, the more I got into these ideas, you know, 2008 and the more 2009, the more I listened to these other people talk, the more I wanted to do something like that. And if I couldn't have the exact medium I wanted at the exact time I wanted it, you know, that's fine. I started doing the podcast, and we've been doing it for over 2 years with maybe a couple month break in there. And now we're transitioning to video. We have a YouTube channel, and I'm hoping to put out a couple videos every month to reach a younger and wider audience. But the real message of the show and the real purpose of the School Sucks Project is to take that word education back from the indoctrinators. You know, education is a lifelong pursuit. It's intrinsically motivated. It has nothing to do with forcing people to do things or forcing information into people's heads. And it really, I think, is about bringing out the natural gifts that human beings have, you know, the capacity for reason, the creativity, the individuality. And school silences that, and school destroys that for too many people. So I don't focus on what education isn't doing. Like, a lot of critics of the public education system say the schools don't do this and the schools don't do that. I think it's important to focus on what the government school system is doing. And, you know, it's basically robbing people of these natural gifts, and it's kind of silencing that internal dialogue and turning people into just these stimulus response mechanisms. Like, the great thing about being human is and having this kind of mind is we get to pause between stimulus and response and think and evaluate and consider what we want to do. And it seems like that's almost stolen from people. You know, like, back to this whole presidential campaign we're watching right now, it seems like most of these Republican candidates are very skilled in, like, the rhetoric, but not evidencing a lot of respect for the intelligence of the audience. Do you know what I mean? Just with the way they say things, the tone, their inflection.
Oh, yes, of course. They're, you know, they're basically speaking to the lowest common denominator, and that's what these public schools have done, right, is basically dumb down people to the point where that's how you have to actually speak to them to get through to them at this point.
Yeah, you know, and so, like, I've been watching the debates, and I remember when I was little, my family had a dog, and we took the dog to obedience school. And they told us that tone was very important. You know, sometimes you need to be like, sit, and other times you need to be like, good boy. And just the way that they talk to people, how they sort of build towards this crescendo when they want an applause. And it doesn't even matter what they're saying. You know, as long as they're not telling the truth, like Ron Paul does about economics or foreign policy, as long as they're promising things and they're talking about how great and how special and how exceptional America is, the content of the speech doesn't matter. It really just comes down to, like, the same kind of tricks you use to bring out some kind of emotional response from a dog. So I think that's the effect of school.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you on that one. It's quite amazing, the history of public education in the U.S. It's basically gone back over 100 years now. I think the first public school was 1821 in Boston, I believe. And, you know, it's really showing itself all the effects and results of all that basically indoctrination for just decades and decades. And the thing that I really find interesting is that people just have no ability to actually think rationally anymore, and that's driven out of them through the school system. Is that something you would agree with?
Oh, sure. And if you look at the origins of the system, I mean, we could go all the way back to the Kingdom of Prussia in the mid-1800s and these German intellectuals like Johann Fichte, who said, you know, the purpose of school should be to remove from the pupil the ability to do anything. Then his school, his master, but in that case, the schoolmaster wishes him to will or wishes him to do or wishes him to think. And, you know, as it moved towards America and you see more of a socialist agenda, these people like Dewey who are trying to plan the perfect society, one of the things that school does is it strips out self-reliance, and not just like dependence on government for, you know, economic security, but for thinking, you know, like other people will do your thinking for you pretty much. And, you know, because of that, again, like it brings us right back to this current time where a thinking person, you can see evidence of a person who thinks because they want to remove contradictions from their thinking. They don't say things like, yeah, abortion is a crime because all human life matters, but what I'd really like to do is invade Iran. You know, that's a major contradiction in thinking. And a thinking person wants to remove those contradictions. And I think they also want to have some kind of adherence to principle. And part of libertarianism or voluntarism or anarchism, those conclusions, they're kind of built up from consistency, like saying, okay, here's principles that are important, the non-aggression principle. No rational person would argue with that. The idea of individual sovereignty or self-ownership. Nobody else owns me. And, of course, because of that, property rights. And to take all of these things that everybody accepts in their personal lives and consistently apply them to their public or political lives, that's the outcome. Like people say, oh, you're just an anarchist. Well, anarchism is not like I have a wheel of things to be and I spin it and it landed on anarchism. It's a conclusion. You know, it's built up from a beliefs, from evidence, and from that comes a belief system. So I think that school robs people of intellectual self-defense and intellectual self-reliance, and that's what it does, and I think that's an important thing to focus on.
In recent years, I've become a father. I have two kids now, 5 and 7 years old, and I've always been a permanent traveler. I've lived all around the world. I've lived in Thailand. I now live in Acapulco, Mexico, and so for me, going to a public school was never even a thought or even really an option anyway, right. And so that's good, and I would never even thought about it anyway, but I've had a lot of questions about whether homeschooling and what kind of homeschooling exactly makes sense. I'm gonna have to re-record this little part.
That's fine.
It's going crazy. What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? Shh. Okay, let's see if she calms down. All right. Bruce, sits. I normally don't record with my two chihuahuas here, but today's a special day. Okay, so I'm going to just start back where I started there, and hopefully they don't go crazy again.
Sure.
Sits. Los dos. See, I have to talk to them like dogs as well. Sits. Bruce, sits. Okay, let's try this again. All right. Yes, and in recent years, I've become a father. I have now a 5 and a 7-year-old, and I've always been a permanent traveler, so I've lived around the world, and I've lived in Thailand. I currently live in Acapulco, Mexico, so going to a public school was never really an option, and I would never even considered it anyway, or any sort of government-regulated private school, really. But I do have a lot of questions about what I should be doing with my kids in terms of properly, an actual real education, not the ones that they talk about in government schools, but real education. And the one thing that's really, this is all new to me. I've never had kids before. And boy, the kids, they really want to learn at this age, 5 years old, 7 years old. They're just, their eyes are open. They're just like, give me something to learn. And what I sort of realized from this is, man, when you send them to those public schools, all that does is just take that will to learn, that desire out of most of them. And so what advice would you give to someone like myself who has younger kids? Is homeschooling the answer? And if so, what kind of homeschooling exactly? Or what should we really be aiming to do with our children?
It's certainly different for everybody. I mean, and it's hard to make a sort of across-the-board prescription for what should be done. Different students have different interests, different needs. And, certainly the advice that I'm most comfortable with applying generally is to kind of get out of the way. You know, kids, like you said, they want to learn and they know how. And I've worked with homeschoolers and really more in an unschool environment even, where I'm just kind of a facilitator and I'm just there to kind of complement whatever their project is and help it along. Now, there's obviously you want them to be able to learn certain skills eventually. But I think one of the reasons why, from my experience anyway, people tend to be too hands-on is they're still kind of stuck in that paradigm that these things have to happen at certain times. I work with a 9-year-old, and one of the concerns is that he is absolutely terrified of math because he spent first and second grade in the public school where they terrorized him with math. And now he doesn't want anything to do with it. And for right now, that just has to be fine. I think some overly structured homeschooling is still based on the idea that people feel like things need to happen at a certain time. And I would try to just encourage everybody to kind of let go of these expectations that are designated for certain age levels. It doesn't really have to be that way. And from what I've found and from what I've seen and from what I've studied, I would say that the unschool approach, more of a hands-off, out-of-the-way approach, is best, especially for young children.
Yeah, I actually never even heard the word unschool until about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And when I heard it, I looked it up and I thought, well, that's exactly what I was sort of thinking. Because, you know, I've gone through this sort of process now of, okay, I have kids. I have to make sure they're not really stupid. So what do I do? And I the only thing I thought was a possibility was homeschooling. And, as we did a little bit more of that, I could see that wasn't totally working either. And we tried to do a little bit more of a regimented, like you said, and it wasn't really working. And, you know, I could just see that there was probably a better ways to do this, but I wasn't. And then I did some research. I came across that word unschooling. And, I think really the question for me at this moment is, they haven't really, well, the five-year-old hasn't really learned how to read yet. I don't know what's a good, well, I guess you just said it right there. There is, should be no rules on what age, but is that normal for a five-year-old to not be at that point yet? Like, I really don't know what's normal, what's not normal, or even if normal is something I should be trying to achieve.
I wouldn't know how to define what's normal, and I think that it can be a gradual process that can happen in very organic ways. And, you know, obviously when you're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, your interests change rapidly, and to just kind of capitalize on whatever the interests are at the time and start to introduce reading, like you're using what a child is already interested in as sort of momentum towards that goal that you have of them learning to read. So, you know, they're invested in it because it's based on one of their interests, but the outcome that you want is eventually achieved because, that's how we learn. I mean, if you think about most of the things that we've learned in our lives, they were probably self-taught. And the things that we're really good at, probably to a large degree, were self-taught. And it should, I don't see any reason why it can't be that way from the beginning, just building on the momentum of what the what intrinsically motivates them.
That's so excellent to hear that. That was my intuition, but I wasn't sure if I could really go with that. You know, like I said, I'm new to all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's great to hear. And actually, that's what I was sort of feeling as well. And my wife, for example, she had the 7-year-old boy from a prior marriage. And actually, he grew up his whole life in Germany. And only in the last 8 months did he come over to Mexico. So he didn't speak one word of Spanish. And we didn't teach him how to speak Spanish, but within 8 months, he now speaks much better Spanish than I do, and I've been here for 4 years, you know, and we didn't even try to teach him. It's just amazing how they'll just pick it up, organically, like you said. So that's really great to hear, and it's been really really interesting to have these kids and to actually see how they can learn these things, and I totally think that's the right way to go, is to take advantage of the things they're interested in at that particular time and use that just to help them learn the things they want to learn. And I think you're totally right again also with the fact that most things that we actually do in our lives and most things that we do well, we were never actually taught. And I actually wrote an article about that a little while ago, basically saying that I was watching some public service ads for Mr. T would say, don't be a fool, stay in school, and all these sort of public service ads. And I was just laughing. I was like, well, Mr. T, did you learn how to lift weights in school? Did you learn how to walk and be an actor in school? No, right? And then there was some other NBA players doing another stay in school. It's like, well, did you learn how to play basketball in school? No, they learned it on the street, right? So yeah, it's just amazing, you know.
I never saw Mr. T do anything before he was like 40 years old on the A-team. Imagine the superstar that Mr. T could have been if he could have started when he was 15 or 16 years old.
That's right. So much time wasted. That's another thing, right? With 12 years of school, and then look at the people in the U.S. They all clamor to go for another 4 to 8 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God.
You know, that's a scam too. And that's something that I've been talking about a lot on my show. My last guest was a guy named Dale Stevens, who started the UnCollege movement. And, you know, if you just look at any chart of the cost of a higher education versus the projected earnings as a result of a higher education, it doesn't add up anymore. It doesn't look like for most careers that it's worth it. And I think that, you know, it used to be show us a high school diploma and you're employable. Certainly now the high school diploma has become the college diploma, but the college diploma isn't worth anymore. It doesn't. I mean, I graduated from college with no skills, no skills. And I think a lot of people who major in, you know, communications or liberal arts or even business, they're not really leaving college as skilled workers, and those degrees just really aren't worth anything. And they're certainly not worth what they cost. So we have this all this pressure to go to college. Like, if you don't go to college, it's basically now like dropping out of school. And we have the government subsidizing higher education, which has manipulated the prices for what these institutions can charge, because the signal that's sent to them is, well, there's an endless amount of money available for it, so we can jack up our prices, and it's just been a disaster.
Yeah, it truly has. The amount of people in student debt in the U.S. is unbelievable, and that's where a lot of those Occupy Wall Street people come from. And, you know, they're so angry, but they don't even know why. And that's it all stems from the public education system. So they never learned how to think. They just learned how to follow orders. Their orders were to go to 4 to 8 years of college, which is going to cost them between 50 and hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's basically worth nothing. And then when they get out, the whole economy is wrecked by the government through the Federal Reserve, central banking, and all the government involvement in the economy. And so they can't get a job to even pay for that education. And then they get very angry. And because they don't even know how to think, they get angry and they believe what the TV tells them, which is it's corporate greed and it's, you know, anything but the government and the public education system and all that sort of stuff. It's just, it's really actually getting quite hard to live among basically brainwashed people. That's part of the reason probably why I just live all over the world now, because in a lot of these other parts of the world, they're not as brainwashed at all. I don't know if their public education systems just don't have enough resources, or if they just, for whatever reason, they just didn't get anywhere near as bad as what happened in most of the Western world.
Yeah, you know, the other thing too, you're absolutely right about the Occupy movement, and it's a real tragedy because, you know, they call themselves the 99%, but they're the 1%. You know, they are the 1%. Like, if you look at everybody who's in this country, how many people are willing to admit the severity of the problems? You know, there goes probably 70% of people. And of the 30% you have left, how many of them are willing to actually do something about it? And they're a very, very small percentage of people in this country who understand that there is something wrong, and they also want to do something about it. But it seems like, from what I've seen, all they want to do is ask the government to do more stuff.
Yeah, well, that's all they've ever known, right? Yeah. The government's been so involved in their lives from basically birth and through right to death with the Social Security system, Medicare, Medicaid. It's just unbelievable the amount of government involvement in the lives of Americans today. Well, Brett Venata, it's been very interesting talking to you, very enlightening for me in particular, having some younger kids. I was going to say school-age kids, but younger kids. Who cares about school, especially public school? Tell people, I'm sure there's a lot of people who want to know where they can get a lot more information about what you do. Tell them where they can get that.
Sure. My website is schoolsucksproject.com. And our YouTube channel is YouTube.com/user/schoolsuckspodcast. So I encourage people to go check out our podcast, subscribe. I think we have 117 shows at this point, and we just started working on videos, so I encourage people to check those out as well.
That's fantastic, and that's all the time we have. So, kids, remember that. Don't be a fool. Drop out of school. And that's all we have for today. So, peace, love, and anarchy.